Hello there.
Welcome back to another episode of Star Wars in the Galaxy, watching all the Star Wars we can get our hands on. I'm Alan.
I'm Jacob.
And today we are back with episode 4 of season 17 of Star Wars in the Galaxy, watching all the Star Wars we can get our hands on. We are back with more Young Jedi adventures. We are going in, I believe, now to the third batch of the third drop of Young Jedi adventures episodes, which I think the second one is part of the first short we're watching is we were watching as part of the second drop, and then the last three, Charon Chase, Adventure with Yoda, and Talon Takeover, were all part of the third one. But yeah, we watched Tree Tribbles, Charon Chase, An Adventure with Yoda, and the Talon Takeover.
In Tree Trouble, we open with Nubs doing Nubs things, just Nubs things. He's meditating at his favorite tree. However, he is disturbed by some big rumbles, tremors. The tree is shaking and rumbling, and he's very worried about this. So he goes to the gang, the usual suspects, to help suss out the source of the problem. They end up going underground into the tree's root structure, and who do they find but Raxlow, the evil birdman, has returned with his drilling machine, drilling into the tree roots for sap that he wants to sell. The Jedi are unable to convince Raxlow to stop drilling, but they realize that he has plugged up all the water sources that usually provide the tree roots with water, and that is knocking the entire ecosystem out of balance and in conjunction with the drill causing the tremors. So they unplug these holes, and the cavern that they're in, the big chamber, the main root chamber, starts filling rapidly with water. So they go with Raxlow into the drill machine for shelter, and it begins floating to the surface. However, it gets stuck on a root, and Raxlow is forced to jettison the cargo pod, which is holding the precious sap that he has drilled, losing it to the depths of the water. But by doing so, he gets them free, and the Jedi, they have a little nice moment with Raxlow before he leaves, and he promises not to change his ways, but they have that little moment nevertheless. In Charhound Chase, we open with Liz and Nubs at the temple training when Kai Brightstorm comes in with some very exciting news. A renowned Jedi Master known as Loden Greystorm. Was it Greatstorm? Greystorm? I couldn't quite hear.
Greatstorm.
Wow, that's a very Star Wars name.
Loden Greystorm, yeah. Who was not written for this episode, by the way.
Yeah. So Loden Greystorm and his Padawan Bell pull up to the temple on Tanu. Bell Zedifar with their Charhound named Ember. A Charhound, by the way, is a literal fire-breathing dog.
Jacob, I have a question for you, actually. Sorry, before you keep going with your summary. What planet is a Charhound from?
I didn't clock that. I may have missed it.
They didn't say in the episode. Just Google it right now.
What planet?
Maybe Jared could tell you.
Oh. Am I being inadvertently used to troll Jared?
Does a little
that
bit.
To do with EC?
A
you gotta
bit.
Be fucking kidding me.
Yeah, of course.
Elfrona.
It's Elfrona.
It's from Elfrona. No.
What's the picture behind me? It's the battle. It's the battle from Led the Jedi on Elfrona.
Dude, the more I hear about Elfrona, the less I want to know, and the more I empathize with Jared. Why would you want to know about a place that has? Oh my God. Anyway, so the Elfronan Hound. The Charhound is with Kai and Bell, end up out in the training yard to get Ember the Charhound some runaround time after the long space voyage on the ship. However, Kai accidentally throws the hound's toy way too far into the forest, and Ember gleefully runs after the toy. So they end up having to go through the woods, engaging in a lot of hijinks. Excuse me. Getting into some trouble, getting into some sticky spots, into some hijinks to try and get Ember back. During that, Kai gets pretty upset that he can't track down Ember and tells Bell that he feels pretty worried that he won't ever be able to be a great Padawan like Bell is. But Bell reminds him that persistence and knocking and getting back up when you get knocked down is the name of the game. And that it's not about immediate excellence all the time. So they find the firehound or the charhound Ember trapped by a giant Gengal? I can't remember how to say
Gengul.
it. The Gengul. That's right. I just watched this episode. I wrote it down, and I was Gengul.
Yeah.
They find the Firehound trapped by a giant Gengul. Kai and Bell have to work together using the Force to throw a giant log for the Gengul to fetch in order to save Ember.
By the way, I didn't know Bell Zedifar was such a huge Chumbawamba fan. Anyway, an adventure with Yoda. Nash Durango comes to the Jedi Younglings who are out with their guy Yoda. Yoda is taking the Yoda has babysitting duties for the days with these younglings, and she reveals that her friend Zephyr is in trouble because pirates are trying to steal his ships, and then they go to his planet Dadoon. We find out very quickly that these pirates named Jay and Fleaver are not just normal pirates. They, for the purposes of the episode, they work fine as pirates, but they're actually part of a broad organization that is building up power throughout the galaxy called the Nile. In months, the Nile will, unbeknownst to all these characters, the Nile will create what is known as the Great Disaster, killing billions in the Hetzel system and sending the galaxy into chaos it had not seen for hundreds of years. But for the meantime, they're trying to steal these ships, and Durango wants to help her friends so she leaves her ship unguarded so that she cannot chase them when they unfortunately do get away. They fly their ship into an asteroid field with the Crimson Firehawk just behind them, and Yoda manages to use the Force to open the cargo door of one of their ship and pull the ships, one with Zephyr literally in it, back to the Crimson Firehawk with the Force. Yoda and Zephyr and the rest of the Jedi regroup on Dadoon to clean up his shop. In the Talon takeover, the Iron Talon, Tabor Valdorn's ship, is taken over by a group of criminals called the Gengul, who take Tabor hostage. His sidekicks, EB3 and Pord, feeling mistreated by him, even though they feel mistreated by him, reach out to the Jedi to help rescue Tabor, which they reluctantly accept, and they go on a dramatic mission to help free Tabor from the Gengul, involving a lot of distraction. Tabor finally learns to put some trust in EB3 and Porn as his sidekicks, and thanks them for doing good work for rescuing them as they outwit Selic, Toa Joe, and the rest of the Gengul. Tabor insists that this does not that the Jedi rescuing him changes nothing about their relationship, but we'll see how that goes. Four very interesting episodes. This is where we start to get into meaty stuff here, I feel like. Yeah. These four, like, all of them are chosen for a very specific reason. Let's go to Tree Troubles first, which the reason is pretty obvious, I think.
It's the first?
No, like, the reason I included it in this.
Oh, yeah. I think I just can't resist talking about Raxlow.
Yeah, that's
no, I mean, pretty... I mean, whenever Raxlow shows up,
yeah.
And I honestly like this one. I can't remember what was the name of the first episode where Raxlow shows up.
What was it? It was the frickin'...
The one where he the one where he cuts down all the trees, basically.
Oh yeah, all the trees on that other planet. I'm gonna check very quickly on our planning sheet. Let me check. It is Forest Defenders.
Forest Defenders. And this is a very similar episode in some respects. You have Raxlow going out there, basically saying in just as bluntly as possible, just saying, I don't care about anything except my pockets and my profits, and I will gleefully do whatever I have to ensure that I'm making money, regardless of what people tell me about the possible downsides. But I do think that this episode, even within the mandate of what this show has to do, which is pretty narrow a lot of the time, I feel like this one does feel a little bit more interesting, a little bit more sophisticated. It has more of a sense of humor. Just all around, it feels just more developed I like the humor a bit more here. I think I like how they touch upon everything being interconnected.
Yeah, absolutely.
With the Jedi saying, it's not just this one thing. You keep drilling, if you plug up the water, it's about the tree roots, it's about the whole ecosystem, it's about all the creatures that live here. And Raxlow's putting himself in harm's way just to keep drilling at this sap. And I feel like that gets at something very essential that the first episode doesn't, which is that unchecked late stage capitalism. This is a parable for the situation that we're in, my opinion.
And I would honestly absolutely
have we're literally putting our own lives on the line, and no one is going to be safe if we keep doing what we're doing. Yeah. But these companies are set up to not stop until they literally won't exist anymore.
I would even expand beyond capitalism just to say greed. This is about greed. This is about taking and taking will ultimately leave you with nothing. The ultimate irony. Yeah, no, mostly I love this episode because Nubs rules and Raxlow drools. That's my four-word summary of this episode. Yeah, Nubs' favorite tree. It's cool. What a chat. You covered a lot of the capitalist themes very well. There is a batshit crazy reference in this episode that I don't know if you caught.
I may not have. What was it?
When we first come upon Raxlow, and we first see his harvester, do you remember what his first line is?
Not off the top of my head.
It's, I love the sound of drilling in the morning.
Oh.
Let me tell you something. If you had asked me, and when I started this series, the 100 craziest things that I could think of that the series would do, I guarantee that an evil capitalist bird voiced by grown-up Sixth Sense boy referencing Apocalypse Now, of all things, wouldn't be close to being on there.
Yeah. Look, say what you want about Raxlow.
Like, what the hell? Why is there just a random Apocalypse Now reference in a kid's show?
I don't know. I feel like say what you want about Raxlow. Say what you want about his wanton disregard for the environment, but he has a sense of humor and he is a fun character. Like, I feel like I've enjoyed Raxlow maybe the most of any antagonist besides.
That's because he hasn't violated the Geneva Convention yet.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that one. But Raxlow is an enjoy. Like, I enjoy watching Raxlow. Even
no, he's an entertaining villain, at least just as much as he's a good guy to hate. I was trying to remember what the name of the next episode we see Raxlow in, and then I remembered what the next episode we see Raxlow in. It's called Raxlow Strikes Back.
I don't know. I feel like Raxlow, obviously I don't co-sign anything that he's doing, but in this context, he's too unserious to hate him. It just feels, at a certain point, it just feels like he's naive, which is an interesting tack to take with this character, but I think it works.
Yeah. I think it works as well. Again, he's naive. Wait until he violates the Geneva Convention.
All right. Once he commits some heavy duty war crimes, I'll be waiting with bated breath for him to join Anakin and the Geneva Convention. The Star Wars Geneva Convention Hall of Fame has a place for Raxlow in it.
Yeah,
apparently, absolutely. And we'll get there.
Yeah, but Kai decided to help that motherfucker in the end is something I don't understand, but whatever. I guess it's being about a good person or some shit. I don't know. I wouldn't make the best Jedi, apparently.
Yeah, ultimately, I think Kai does the resoundingly right thing in this situation, which is you don't change people's minds by leaving them to drown. And I think that he proves something to Raxlow in this episode. And I think ultimately, I think Kai demonstrates the strength of the light side and the Jedi way, which is ultimately whether or not compassion. You see it. It's about not even necessarily compassion, but just it's about the redemptive power of assuming that people can do the right thing. And it's about the power of those redemptive actions of giving people second chances. And given what you've said about Raxlow and the Geneva Convention, I'm not particularly hopeful in this case.
I was going to say, I think it's ruined in advance for me knowing that Raxlow stays a fucking asshole in the next episode, but I think I would be less bothered if I didn't know that Raxlow stayed exactly the same way and got worse. I don't know what, I'm just looking at my notes. I don't know. I've had these notes down for a while. There's certain things I don't know what I'm referencing, but there's an all caps note I have here. Boo Kai, Nubs was cooking. I don't know what that was, but I have no doubt in
it Nubs was because it was probably because Kai held Nubs back when Nubs was getting up in Raxlow's face and cursing him out.
Yes, that was what it was. That would probably be it. I'm sure that was what it was. Nubs is no stranger to absolutely cooking. We see an adventure with Yoda. We get more turret Nubs, which is my favorite Nubs. Nubs just blasting away in the turret. Fantastic. Love it. You have any other thoughts about this episode? Should we go on to Char Hound Chase? I think maybe the episode I'm most excited to talk about.
Oh, then yes, by all means, let's chase the Char Hound.
So this is extremely important. This is maybe the most important episode of Young Jedi Adventures as of this point so far. Loden Greatstorm and Bell Zedifar are established characters from first introduced in Charles Soule's Light of the Jedi, the first novel of the High Republic. They're one of the main master Padawan pairs we follow as they grapple with the effects of the great disaster inflicted by the Nile on an unsuspecting galaxy. And the High Republic, I don't know if the High Republic fandom online is incredibly passionate and compared to a lot of other Star Wars fandoms, pretty damn pure, actually. Like, there's not a lot of toxicity in the High Republic fandom.
I think books can do that sometimes.
Yes.
Maybe not in the wider world, but at least within Star Wars, that seems to be an established pattern.
Yeah. But Loden and Bell quickly became, fan favorite characters in the High Republic initiative. And I read Light of the Jedi a while ago, and I got to know Loden and Bell and all that kind of stuff. And then at the end of the book, I'm going to major spoilers for Light of the Jedi and The Rising Storm here for those listening. At the end of Light of the Jedi, Loden gets captured by the Nile. They take him prisoner, basically, and they torture him relentlessly. And Bell kind of has to adapt to life without his master, who he doesn't even know is alive at this point. Then, during a raid, the Jedi managed to rescue Nile. The Jedi managed to rescue Loden from the Nile. And then something horrible happens. The Nile unleash their newest terror called a Shriekarai. Other names include the Nameless or the Eaters of the Force, whatever you want to call these creatures. Are you looking at what a Shriekarai does?
I'm trying to, but I can't spell it.
Look up the Nameless, honestly. Look up the Nameless.
Okay, hold on.
Look, the Nameless will do the same thing. So they unleash the Nameless on Loden.
Okay.
And you tell me what the Nameless does.
I'm pulling it up. It first directed me to a song or a band, so I was taking a moment. Eaters of the Force. That gives me some idea of the other name. Oh, they eat the living force. Oh, they eat they eat force-sensitive individuals.
They turn Loden to dust. They reflect his own force energy back at him, his greatest fears, and turn him to dust. They disintegrate Loden Greatstorm, one of the greatest Jedi Masters of his era. So yeah, that's what happens to Loden. As of phase 3 of the High Republic, Bell is still alive. And I wouldn't say thriving. He went through a bit of a traumatic experience losing his master to the first Nameless attack in 100 years, basically. But yeah, Loden gets the Star Wars equivalent of snapped, I'd say.
Yeah.
But as I like to usually say to Connor, look, we got to get over it now. We got to get over the horrible thing that happened to Loden. It's just dust in the wind at this point. Heyo.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Anyway.
I see.
Point is, so Char Hound Chase was actually written by the Rising Storm's author, Kevin Scott.
Okay.
Which is funny. He did an interview with StarWars.com. when it was announced that he was bringing Loden and Bell into the High Republic. And he was like, I'm so happy to get to write these characters again. And I'm like, yeah, Kevin, I bet you're happy. What happened last time you wrote Roland the Great Storm? Remind me what happened last time you wrote Roland the Great Storm. Remind me, Kevin. What did you do to him? What did you do to him, Kevin? There are a bunch of images that the High Republic fandom regularly posts on Twitter, and it's just the phrases "what the fuck" followed by authors' names. So, what the fuck, Charles? What the fuck, Claudia? What the fuck, Daniel? What the fuck, Kevin? What the fuck, Justina? You get the point. This is a very "what the fuck, Kevin" moment. Yeah, no, I'm thrilled to see Loden and Bell in this episode. One of the things I wanted immediately when this series started was those connections other than Yoda to other Star Wars media. This is not going to be the last we get. We're also going to meet Jedi Master Astala Maru in a later episode, and the Chancellor of the Republic, actually, Lena, at the end of the season. But these are the two big ones for now.
Okay, makes sense.
And yeah, I also just want to mention, and I made Jared double over in laughter with this name recently because it's one of the most stupid Star Wars names of all time. Loden, in his heyday, slew a droid revolutionary that was trying to basically take over the galaxy, doing a droid uprising and basically have droids rule the galaxy. And Loden took down this droid revolutionary leader. And this droid revolutionary leader has the edgiest name of all time.
Uh-oh.
Ajax Sigma.
Is this post? When was this name concocted?
Let's see. Let's check. Ajax Sigma was the first appearance was in a comic published November 23rd, 2022.
I feel like that might. I feel like that's solidly post Sigma Male. The publication date is solidly post Sigma Male, like entering the internet zeitgeist. So, look, I'll give them the benefit. Look, first off, I don't know who was involved in the creation of this character. Also, these things take time. So this name was probably concocted before the Sigma Male became a thing in the internet zeitgeist, but still, that is too funny. That is really funny. I don't know.
The character of Ajax Sigma is so fucking overdramatic, but like by the time you get to the end of his arc in the Dark Droid series, which I've read, I'm like, damn, I am feeling bad for a character with the worst name in Star Wars.
Now I really want someone to write a fan fiction of a version of the Star Wars universe in which self-improvement, grind culture, crypto bro-y, like weird gender essentialism, like Andrew Tate, like all that stuff, in which that exists in Star Wars, and in which Ajax Sigma is actually this character changing their name in order to be more Sigma. Well, I think that would be absolutely hilarious if that happened.
Look, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if they did something like that in Young Jedi Adventures. Again, you'll see complicated political themes. You'll see NIMBYism later in this season. It, like, crazy shit. But yeah.
We need to know what the HoloNet version of, like, podcasts are, basically.
Yeah, we do. But Loden and Bell, it's really cool to see them animated in a visual media for the first time. It's truly awesome to see that. There's this very infamous portion at the very beginning of Light of the Jedi where Loden and Bell are training on Elfrona. And Loden and Bell's like feeling a little not confident, confident himself about exactly what his control over the Force. And Loden's, okay, let's test it now. And he pushes Loden out of the ship, flying high in midair. And Bell has to slow himself down with the Force to survive. And Loden was never going to let Bell die, obviously, but like the point was that Bell thought he was in danger, so he reacted like he would be in danger.
Yeah.
And it was one of those great moments where when I realized, oh, this is going to be something different. The High Republic is going to be, like, Light of the Jedi is going to be something different as a Star Wars story, but while still remaining intrinsic to that core of what Star Wars is, yeah, and the lessons of the Jedi.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sad that we don't get to see Loden as much in this episode, but we get a lot of Bell. Alex Damon has floated the idea of Bell later on taking Kai Brightstar as a Padawan, which I think would be awesome.
I like them as a pairing. I enjoyed the dynamic of Kai with all his ambition and all his bravado, really seeing what it's like. Not really, but just getting a taste of what it's like at the next level. He is faced with a big challenge that he can't, that he can't audaciously dance his way through.
No, and very much
he does learn that lesson of like perseverance, because clearly he's a very talented individual, to the point where he hasn't hit that wall yet, when really hard work and preparation is the only way to succeed. He's still in that phase, and I think everyone in life for different things hits that wall in different ways, but he's still very much in that phase one where he is just talenting his way to some extent through it. Clearly a lot of things, clearly some of the physical side of being a Jedi comes a little easier to him. But I think it's interesting to see what's that going to look like, and for him to get that message from someone like Bell, who's in that position where he probably wasn't expecting that to come from him, especially when he sees himself so far from where he wants to be.
Yeah.
So it was interesting. It was interesting.
The thing I also like is that Bell is in that mentorship role. Like, Bell gets to seem like the awesome Jedi, which wouldn't be such a big deal if it wasn't for the fact that in Light of the Jedi, he's hanging around all of these legendary Jedi. But, like, he's a Padawan. He's hanging around the legendary Lone Greystorm is his master. After Lone gets captured, he gets another famous Jedi master named Indira Stokes. He's also hanging around the Blade of Bardotta, the legendary Porter Engel, a lot. Like, he's hanging out with, like, mythological Jedi. But to Kai, he might as well be among them.
Yeah, I think that's an undeniable part of being human. The younglings, they're 12, 11, 12 maybe? I'm not sure exactly. Maybe a little younger?
I'd say 8, 9.
Okay, so yeah, they're 8, 9. Yeah, like, they're in the equivalent of Jedi grade school. Like, when you're in grade school, a Padawan who's probably what?
Actually, I can look 17, up Bell's 18, canon 19. Age. I'm sure we can find Bell's canon age.
I feel if we're drawing a comparison...
Yeah, Bell was 18.
Yeah, so you're like when you're in grade school, I feel like, at least for me, like, that was very impactful, hanging out with, working with people in that age range where you're like, okay, wait, these people aren't adults, but they're also, it felt a little bit like, oh my God, these are big kids who are adults. Like, they were superheroes. And I think it's cool that we see both sides of Bell in Star Wars as well, because that just goes to show, to these kids, to Kai, he is a legend, and he is like everything that Kai wants to be. And then you turn around and he's on the other side of that.
And very much during phases 1 and 3 of the High Republic, from what I know about it, there's this idea, there are the legendary Jedi Masters of the time there. You have your Stellan Geoses, your Porter Engels, your even Yar'el Poof and Obo Wren Sisses are on the council even back in the High Republic era. They're that old. There's this incoming class of Jedi who are like late Padawan, early Knights. And it's Bell, it's Vernestra Rowe, who we'll see in the act, Reeth Sylas. They're all these a few years older than we are, basically, around our age. Who are like basically stepping into, like, they're coming into their own as Jedi.
Yeah.
And basically they get a reality check very quickly when the Nihil threat starts. Mm-hmm. It's no longer about, are you ready? You have to be ready.
Okay, I see.
You don't get to choose when you're ready. You get to choose how you react to this stuff, but you're put in this, whether you like it or not, and you're confronted with these incredible problems.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I like to see Bell like being that role model in this, because it's very much how we
see the other side of that coin.
We see the other side of that coin. But yeah. And also, seeing Ember, a Charhound, live action is fantastic. Ember is by Loden and Bell's side at the Elfrona outpost in Light of the Jedi. This takes place in the same year as Light of the Jedi, so it's probably a few months before Light of the Jedi. Kai and Bell and Loden better enjoy that 6 months of peace they're getting before the entire galaxy changes for them.
Yeah, I love the Charhound in this. It feels very kind of, I guess in the High Republic we have, the High Republic is where we get the sentient rock, right?
Yes, that's Geode.
Yeah, we have Geode. I feel like the High Republic, in modern Star Wars, the High Republic is the is undoubtedly becoming the place for just off-the-wall stuff like this. But this feels very old school. This feels very 80s Marvel Legend comics. It's literally just a dog that breathes fire and has, like, glowing eyes.
Yes,
and I love
yes,
it. I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
No, but yeah, no, Layla Jedi is fantastic. And props to Charles Soule for first writing these characters, for first introducing these characters, even though I know the High Republic was a very collaborative initiative. He did write the book where they first appeared, and then Cavan further developed them in Rising Storm. It was nice seeing Cavan return to this episode. He wrote a lovely episode with Star Wars characters he decimated in front of our very eyes. How kind of him, Cavan. I want you to know I really appreciate it, Cavan. Anyway, the High Republic authors are well known, are infamously well known for causing their readers as much pain as possible with characters they love. They're like, okay, here's the character that you love. We're going to make you love them so much. And they're dead now. I wrote, and I sent this to a friend of the show, Connor Shahidi, who is a big fan of High Republic. I wrote in my notes, great meeting Bell and Loden. I sure hope nothing terrible happens to them. But yeah, no, this is such an important episode to me because seeing those High Republic characters in here, seeing Bell and Kai fight off that Gangle, which I thought was a really great connection. Seeing Kai learn from an older Jedi who's not Zia. No offense to Zia, but she's been like the only person, like the only real adult Jedi other than Yoda that he's gotten a chance to live up to see Loden and Bell now. It's a big deal.
It's nice, yeah. I like it.
All right, do we want to go to Adventure with Yoda?
Let's do it. Where do we start? I can start by saying I'm a little more... It was never the biggest deal, but I don't think I'll ever be fully not a little bit weirded out. And not in a bad way, not in a critical of the show way, but I don't know if I'll ever fully be mentally okay with this 200-year... younger Yoda that doesn't quite talk like the Yoda we know. There were a couple of lines, and I can't think of them off the top of my head. I should have written them down. I can't think of them off the top of my head. But there were also a couple of lines in this one, like we were talking about the last time Yoda was involved. There were a couple of lines where I was like, yeah, Yoda definitely, his cadence has been modified. It's not quite as backwards as it usually is.
Yeah. And I think, again, part of that, as we discussed with Isabella, is that accessibility for kids. They don't want to...
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%.
Much. You could also put part of that, too, in the prequels and the originals. Yoda is closely clocking 900. However bad his speech... However mangled his speech was before, the one thing that we know does not help with that is age.
And I think also my headcanon... is honestly that, look, Yoda at that point, maybe he's not quite at the point where he gives zero shits, because by the time we get to the prequels, he quite clearly wants to be retired, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm being slightly facetious, but I'm also not, when I say that maybe the reason Yoda is talking like that is because he doesn't really give a shit anymore. And I think we all have people of a distinguished... Yeah, we all know people who, when they get to a certain more distinguished age, stop giving a fuck as much, in as much as not mincing your words, or maybe this is Yoda's version of just saying, yeah, I'm gonna talk weird, I will. Do what about it, will you? Kind of,
is fun. Yeah, Yoda is quickly going down the path of giving no shits, and I respect that, but yeah, the thing with this episode that I love, of course... There are some fantastic Yoda moments in this episode.
Yeah, we get some bangers.
Yeah, but the big thing that grabbed my attention, of course, is the pirates are robbing Zephyr, Our boss said to take the vectors and anything else we can grab. And I didn't know this at the time, but of course, we see the Nile insignia on their ships. And I'm like,
yeah.
Who is your boss? Is it Kossiv or Pen Ata or Lorna D or Markeon Rowe? For those keeping track, that was my impression of our friend of the show, Michael McCoy's impression of Mark Thompson doing Markeon Rowe in the High Republic books. Seriously, Michael does a great Markeon Rowe impression. And there was a moment, if y'all have watched the last EC, there was a question I wrote literally just to have Michael enter Markeon Rowe voice for 2 seconds, because I love it so much. But the Nile is just such an interesting organization to me, and it's they developed such an interesting type of villain. Yes, they're pirates. It's one of those things that, like, calling the Nile pirates is like calling the Nile pirates
doesn't quite do the situation justice.
It's like calling the Empire an authoritarian government.
Like, they're like, the...
It's true, but the Empire is so much more than an authoritarian government. They're fascists trying to control the literal nature of fucking reality.
Yeah.
The Nile are the ultimate, like, anarchists, basically. They basically just want people to fucking get on their off their turf, but they're fine with disrupting everything in order to get people to do that. They're the ultimate militant. The Nile are the ultimate militant Star Wars libertarians, is what they are.
Interesting. Like, they just want no central governmental rule whatsoever.
Yes, exactly. Although okay. although Markeon kind of fudges a little bit once he gets into power, obviously, you know, like, of course, power corrupts all, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, all that kind of stuff. So, like, definitely there's stuff where Markeon tries, like, once Markeon Rowe gets into power, he's like, okay, I'm going to start putting these restrictions on the galaxy right here and creating these barriers and all that kind of stuff. Very much Markeon by the time of beginning of phase 3 of the High Republic, when the Nile have found their most success of the entire initiative. Somebody used the analogy of a dog chasing a car. When the dog catches up to the car, they want to catch the car. What is their plan once they do that? Yeah. And he doesn't know. He just does not know. So he's just making it up as he goes along.
That tends to happen sometimes.
Yeah.
With groups like that.
And actually, I see a lot of Markeon, honestly, in Tabor, actually. Markeon is objectively a much worse person than Tabor. And most of the people who I talk to about Tabor believe in Taberdemption. And the only rise they want to see of Markeon is his head risen on a pike.
Okay.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the Nile because they're great.
Yeah.
The pirates send what I call pre-droidicas after them. Like, they looked a little like droidicas, didn't they?
In my notes, I wrote crab droid. I thought they were pretty squat, and to me, they look like. But yeah, they're somewhere in between that, I would say.
Yeah.
They're larger fighting droids. This fight scene was sick. I loved watching Yoda pull a Kylo Ren and stop the blaster bolt, freeze the blaster bolts in midair and redirect them to defeat the pirates.
It's fantastic.
And it was definitely, it was on the outer edge of what I was expecting this show would pull out the stops for an amazing scene like this.
This show towards the end gets a tad more violent than it is at the beginning.
Have we seen any on-screen fatalities yet? I don't think we have, right?
No, and there won't be.
And there won't, okay.
There will not be. Okay, I'm saying not more actual, like, wounds or anything. Like, no, I do not believe there will be, I do not believe anybody dies in Young Jedi Adventures that I remember specifically.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I feel like I would have remembered. Yeah, there's some more violence going on. And this is one of the most violent episodes of Young Jedi Adventures yet, and still this is pretty tame. that conflict of Nash trying to obviously trying to do too many things at once and spreading herself thin. Then they get onto the ship, and that's actually one of the things. This episode was one of the reasons. One of the things I love about this episode is, of course, as listeners know, Yoda is and remains my favorite Star Wars character of all time. And Nash Durango is this, like, cocky, green, 7-year-old pilot.
I feel like Yoda's the green one.
Okay.
Yeah. No, anyway, you're right, yeah. You're right, yeah. I don't understand how they've got 7-year-olds flying around planes.
Who is literally 100th of the age Yoda is. And yet, what does Yoda say? Nash, believe in you, we do.
Yeah.
And that's the power of Yoda. Yoda's power is to look in a 7-year-old's eyes and basically be like, no, I trust this girl with my life.
Yeah, it's that's what the Jedi do. They seem to have a track record of putting very young people in very responsible positions, maybe a little bit, maybe to the extreme. But that being said, I think you're right. I think there's something very powerful about what Yoda does, and this episode definitely shows that. You're absolutely right. The way that he approaches things, I think.
Yeah, it's great. And then we go into the asteroid field, and then I don't know if you caught this. We get Yoda's theme straight into the asteroid belt.
That was awesome. I was gonna say,
like,
with the music in this episode.
I really did. Yeah, no disrespect to Matthew Margeson, but God, just putting those two together back to back was fucking chilling. Empire Strikes Back soundtrack is on another level. It really is.
Completely agree. Completely agree.
Let's see. Yeah, and then we have, I think, a fantastic moment, Yoda moment, not just for this series, but just generally, which is him ripping the cargo bay doors open and then freaking the Zeppelin the vectors out of there. Like, that
continue.
That is like a great Yoda moment, not just for the show, just generally speaking.
Yeah, no, when he's just, enough experiential learning, enough lessons for one day. I gotta take care of business now.
I gotta flex on him.
Yeah, just gotta go crazy.
Yeah.
Just gotta go for the big play. Show off some serious force power, really. A metaphorical gun show. Yoda just flexing on the haters. Absolutely. it's wonderful. It's wonderful. But unless you've got anything else that you want to discuss for this episode.
I really like this episode. I love the characterization of Yoda, but let's go on to the Talon Takeover.
Talon Takeover.
Which, so I have to provide some backstory to this episode for you.
Okay.
We skipped an episode that is maybe my one regret of leaving out, though I think it's fine, honestly. There is an episode called The Gangrels that we left out, which formally introduced us to this crew, The Gangrels.
Okay, that makes sense. I was going to say they're playing a little fast and loose with just putting these people in there. So there was one episode before,
but you don't really need to know anything other than they're the people who we put in to make Tabor start questioning things about himself.
Yeah, makes
sense. And, like, Tabor is a villain, but he's also a kid. These fuckers have no remorse.
Yeah.
Like, these are legit criminals.
I don't even know if I would fully call Tabor a villain.
I'm saying like an antagonist in the series.
Yeah, I think he's more of an anti.
Yeah.
I think he's more of an anti-hero.
We'll see how that goes.
He's a very sympathetic. At least at this point, he's a sympathetic character where he really... Yeah. Oh. It's really clear how he's been taken in by the vision, the fantasy of being this powerful pirate, and that's what he feels he needs to do, when in reality it's not serving him and he's not really getting where he needs to be, and he's, like you said, he's just a naive kid at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. What am I gonna say? But yeah, it's No, it's really interesting to see the Gangles. And like, they don't show mercy. Juru and Totojo and Selak, they're bad people. By the way, I had a moment in the episode, and I'm sure I had this when I was originally watching the episode, but I had this when I was rewatching this. And I'm like, wait, Totojo sounds a little familiar. And I look him up, and you know what species he is, right?
What's that? No, I'm
he's an Enzelan. He's the same species as Babu Freak.
Okay.
Which is like that kind of stuff. But he doesn't look like an Enzelan. I will say that. He doesn't look like an Enzelan, which caused me to like, is this an older Enzelan, a younger Enzelan? Like, that doesn't really add up to me, but whatever. He's an Enzelan. I think it's fun to have a bad Enzelan because it's funny to hear that from the other side.
Yeah.
But yeah, one of the big things, of course, this episode is about is that EB3 and Pord realize how bad of a friend Tabor is. And Tabor realizes how bad of a friend he's been.
Yeah. We see him try to rectify that.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, there's of course, this is on the path to Tabor Redemption, as I call it, hashtag Tabor Redemption, baby. And also, of course, having Selak as that, as the classic Trandoshan. Like, instantly, when you see Trandoshan, you think, in most cases, you think, yeah, no, evil.
We need some more, we need some nice Trandoshan. We need
Skeer.
Some cool
Jedi Master from the High Republic, Skeer.
Yeah, this is what I get for not being caught up on the High Republic, but my point still stands. There's an imbalance right now. There's a real imbalance in the galaxy.
No, I agree with you. But yeah, no, they're the distractions of the Gangles and them sending Juba and Totojo just like chasing them is just so fucking funny to me. I love how that's my favorite thing like about this show, honestly, is that there are so many people throughout the show that are like, you're just kids, blah, 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 blah. And they always underestimate them at their own peril.
Yeah, absolutely.
Never underestimate the kids. For those of you who've seen Bad Batch recently, never underestimate the kids. It is a consistent theme in Star Wars, and it reveals even more here. Do you have anything else for this episode?
Oh, no, yeah, absolutely. This might have been my favorite, or close to my favorite of the bunch. I think the contrast between how Tabor and how the Jedi treat Pord and EB3 obviously is striking. But also, once again, like in Tree Trouble, that's the one. Like in Tree Trouble, the Jedi, they heed the call. It would be very easy for them to say, get stuffed. Like, you hang with Tabor. you hang with Tabor. You steal stuff from everyone. And we even see that. We see that they don't have anyone to turn to because they've burnt all those bridges and because they've screwed over everyone else in the community on Tanu, and yet the Jedi are still there.
Yeah,
which is interesting because
the Jedi help all people.
From the outset, you're not necessarily sure what the right thing to do is, but I guess the Jedi kind of, once again, they know, and it's their policy. Hey, anyone can make a better excuse me. I apologize. You have to. Catastrophic sneeze. The Jedi really do subscribe to that belief that anyone at any point can make a better choice. And it's written into their policy that it's no matter what, at least at this point in history, or with the practices of how these Jedi Padawans operate and view life. So long as the door isn't completely closed and locked, we're gonna see where it goes in terms of helping people, reaching out, connecting. And I think that's really valuable. And I like that they're promoting that lesson a lot because it really is important and it's easy to get lost. It's easy for that to get lost.
It is.
I also love that Tabor is obviously he's really forced to trust his companions here in a way that he often doesn't, but also that the Jedi and Kai specifically consciously facilitates that is really wonderful.
I absolutely agree with you. It's a wonderful episode that sets us on a great path for Tape Redemption. Absolutely.
I was gonna say, I love the, if you, on the one hand, it does feel so obvious to some extent that it is a little bit cheesy, but then again, it can totally be forgiven. This fact can totally be forgiven, but
just wait until they add new wrinkles to Taper's character.
Just the way that they do the thing differently. The whole kind of reluctant redemption trope. The Tabor just being like, no, I'm still the bad guy. I'm the big bad pirate. You're supposed to hate me. You're supposed to be scared of me. And we're just gonna keep on loving you until the real you shines through and you drop this whole pirate stealing stuff, wrecking havoc thing.
In a few episodes, you're going to look back at this and you're going to be so amazed at how right you were.
Oh, good. I thought you were going to, I thought we were going to have another moment like earlier where you were basically telling me, yeah, that's not going to fucking happen.
Well, you're nailing Tabor's arc in this season in ways you don't even understand now.
It's not exactly, to be fair, it's not exactly a secret. The show's not trying to make it hard, you know.
At least that's what you think.
Okay, there's a lot. You've been hyped. Whatever this plot twist is, the secret identity, from what I understand, maybe from what you've been saying, a lot is going to be revealed. So I'm excited. But yeah, these were some really good episodes. Like these were really enjoyable, and I felt so I could chew on these a little bit more, so to speak. Particularly Tree Trouble and the Talon Takeover.
Yeah.
They felt like they had more substance and they had a lot more to say than some of the episodes. Yeah. And I think the show doesn't get in the context of a show for small children. Young Jedi Adventures doesn't set itself a particularly low bar. But I think that I'm more and more appreciative of how it goes about balancing the different things that the writers are setting out to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. My personal favorite is Charhan Chase just because of Loden and Bell, but no, they're all four of them are great. And I'm excited to keep going next week on In a Galaxy. Next week, we are going to be continuing on with more Young Jedi Adventures. We just left off with the 15th episode. Next week, we are going to be watching the 16th episode, both parts, Mystery of the Opal Cave and Clash, one of my personal favorite episodes, Clash. The first half of the 17th episode called Stuck in the Muck, which is very important and cool. We're not going to do the second half of 17 or either half of 18, even though the first half of 18 called The Great Leaf Glide is very fun. We're going to instead be skipping to the first part of 19, called Jacob Go to the Dock. Tell me what the fourth short we're gonna be watching is called. The fourth episode we're gonna be watching is called
Life Day.
Oh, and yes, this episode does take place on Kashyyyk.
Oh god, this should be interesting. This should be interesting.
Whatever you're thinking, yes.
No, I'm very curious. Sign me up.
100% it's a damn good episode. It's a damn good episode. You want to know something fucking crazy? Remember at the end of the holiday special when the Wookiees go into that weird dimension where they're in red robes and they hold those globes as a celebration of Life Day? Remember that? Yeah, that.
All right, forward.
That's
to
relevant it. To next episode.
All this and more next week.
Star Wars fucking in the Galaxy. Crazy. Some fucking crazy stuff. But anyway, that's going to be it for this episode of Star Wars in the Galaxy. Thank you for so much for listening to this episode. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, anywhere you listen to podcasts. We'll be there. Follow us everywhere at In a Galaxy Pod. You can follow me everywhere at my link tree, linktr.ee/_HVN327. We, as of recording this episode, this is the first time, this is recorded after Jared and I made our huge announcement this morning about the story of Skywalker, a massive project chronicling all relevant stories, in, at least in our opinions, to the Skywalkers and the impact they had on the galaxy. I've been working up a storm editing on this. It's going to be an over 3 hour long video. It's going to be so expansive, and it's going to release on May 4th. I'm so excited about it. But I think if that's it, I'll just say, may the Force be with you always.